The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 9th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It is Free for All Friday, and man, can I just be honest? Thank God it's Friday. It has just been one of those weeks, and I know that you know what I'm talking about. It's just, it's busy now, right? The summer has come and gone. Schools are back in. Sports are cranking up. It's just, people are moving in all over town. It's just that time of year again, and it's the best time of year. We really do love it and enjoy it, but it's always the transition, right? That 2 to 3 week transition period between the quoted relaxation of summer and then the craziness of the fall. And that's where we are right now, right? We're whether that's in your job or in your personal life with the kids or in the sports world or anything. It's just, it always just starts to pick up right around this time. And it was just one of those weeks for your guy. So I'm glad it's Friday. I'm looking forward to the weekend. And I'm looking forward to what's going to be a really, really good show here today. And as I told you yesterday, no Uncle T-Bone today, had his full-time job obligation, so he will be back on Monday. But the good news is we've got the voice of the Lee Scott Warriors with us. Christian Griffin is in the studio on this free-for-all Friday. My man, good to see you, brother.
Good to see you. Yeah, happy to be, for it to be Friday is very much an understatement. But as hot as it is outside, I think there might be some even hotter takes here this afternoon. What a segment, what a show that we have built in for y'all. We are both very excited about it. We hung out a little bit this morning moving around some furniture for somebody that's moving in and got to talk about the show, and we were talking about how excited we are for it. We want y'all to be a part of it. 334-321-1390. We're going to get a little bit into Hugh Freeze's press conference this afternoon. We'll talk a little bit about fall camp. We'll talk some conference realignment. Just a, yes. Hey, by the way, this team is no longer here. They are here. And then we're going to end it with something that I think both of us are the most excited for, SEC over under win predictions. Mm-hmm. Something that, again, is the talk of everything right now, as we are 22 days from Auburn football. We are 15 days from college football. And not to stress you or myself out, but we are two Fridays. We are 14 days,
man,
before your Auburn High Tigers and my Lee Scott Warriors take the field for the first time, man, this season.
Yeah, there's a lot still to be done, but the anticipation that I have, and I think a lot of the fans for those two programs, is extremely high, and cannot wait for Friday nights in the booth for high school football. Well, he gave you the rundown, and that's it. And no guest today. It's you, me, and Christian in the studio, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line. You can call in, be a part of the show that way, or you can reach out, shoot us a text, and we'll get to that in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. Quick comments or questions, you can send them there. If you want to have a little conversation with us, you can call in on the phone lines. And let's start with what Hugh Freeze had to say this morning, who had his weekly press conference. We're a week into fall camp for Auburn football. It started a week ago on Thursday, on August 1st, I think, is right around there, and August 2nd, whatever that day was. And so we're a week into to fall practice, and there were a lot of questions this morning about different position groups and different guys, different players. What have you seen? What have you seen from last year compared to this year? I mean, there was a lot thrown at Hugh Freeze. I was there this morning. There was a lot thrown at him this morning. And you and I both agree, while I feel he said some good things, you could see a particular feeling through him, even with some of the things he said. He's got a lot going on.
Yeah, no, he definitely does. And it's a good and bad thing. And I think that's why the assistants are playing such a big role in this fall camp. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. If you were to just listen to what was said, you would love everything that was said by Coach Freeze. But as you were there and as I watched, the body language didn't necessarily completely match the tone or the way the words were said. You can tell that he's stressing about some things. And again, I feel like that's a good thing, because if he would have come in hopping and skipping and smiling, you'd have almost a little bit of question marks. All right, why are we overeager as the head coach and everything? He understands that there's a lot to work on. But he did say that he used the word pleased. I am very pleased with a lot of the things that are going on, whether it's the on both sides of the ball. He did mention early on that the special teams were a little bit sloppy early on, but
which is to be expected.
Right, especially with McPherson, your starting place kicker, dealing with an illness. You expect everything to still be falling into place. But the biggest thing that highlighted, at least when I was watching, is how scared he is with injuries. He understands that there are a couple position groups that are not as deep as he would like for them to be. There's a couple that he really likes. That D-line, I know that he is very confident in, and he answered a question about that a little later on in the press conference. But at least early on, he mentioned how he was scared to death about keeping guys healthy, that he wants to play with some contact, and he's mentioned there was some chippiness, not necessarily between players. That when he said chippiness, everybody kind of questioned, like, oh gosh, what's
happening?
You're talking all about culture, you're talking about everything, but he didn't necessarily mean chippiness from that standpoint, more so from the execution standpoint of how important it is to keep guys healthy, to make sure that linemen aren't falling on running backs, things like that. But again, that was the biggest thing that I noticed, was he was stressed a lot about keeping guys healthy.
Well, he mentioned, not by name, but everybody knew what he was talking about when he said, you know, I've got long days, I'm not on my phone very much, but hopped on social media the other night and found out that one of our conference foes lost their starting running back. And, of course, that's C.J. Baxter at Texas. I mean, he was either going to be a one or a very, very close two for Texas. They have a pretty good 1-2 punch. But Freeze mentioned that specifically, and you're absolutely right. You could see and hear how concerned he is, because, look, it happens every year. I mean, you lose guys to injury at all positions every year. This isn't a new concept, but what you said is spot on. The fact that once you see it happen somewhere, you really start to digest into your depth, and you're like, maybe we're not as deep as we thought we were. And I think that's what Hugh Freeze has realized this week. You had Keandre Lambert-Smith, who rolled his ankle this week. You have Keontae Scott, who's out with a hamstring injury. Yep. Like, you start losing big pieces like that, your starting dude in the back end, your starting receiver, probably your go-to guy early. You see them get banged up. I think they'll be okay. But just that instant or imminent threat of, oh, wow, we are. And the question that I think a lot of Auburn fans may start to have is, wait, is this team one big injury away from this season not going the way that we want it to go? You hope not. But it very well could be.
It very well could be. And I know that any time that Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, gets mentioned on any sort of sports talk, it kind of turns everybody off. But I heard him talking in his fall practice, and he brought everybody together and said, guys, this is just how it is. You're going to stay away from the quarterbacks, and you are not going to touch Travis Hunter. And when you're a team and you understand that there's guys like that can make or break your season as a whole, and coming from him, who, being quite frank, gets it better than just about anybody.
Sure.
If he's up there saying there are certain guys that you will not touch, we will keep them healthy, somebody like Auburn, especially in the position groups where they're thin, or the position groups where you feel like they're going to need the most out of every single body. That's where the concern comes from. Again, Keandre Lambert-Smith at that wide receiver position, we've talked about it to where he needs to be the guy at least those first 3 or 4 weeks before those other guys really come into the offense, let the speed of the game, which he talked about with a couple guys, let that catch up to him. But keeping guys like that for this Auburn team healthy during fall camp has to be a priority.
And somebody asked about special teams in terms of like return guys and what that was looking like early on. And you know, it's been admitted that and said that Jarquez Hunter wants to be back there and Keontae wants to be back there. And Freeze was like, no, don't think so. Freeze is like, I don't think that's going to happen. As bad as they want to be and as electric as that could be, that's the absolute worst, well, maybe not the absolute, but one of the worst ways to lose your starting running back is because he was on the kick return and got taken out at the knee or something like that. Or, I mean, we saw Keontae Scott get hurt last year, and he would eventually come back, and he got his punt return touchdown. But it's just in those facets of the game that, yes, they're important, but they don't mean as much as others. You don't want to put – and that's no slight to if it is a Bryce Kane or a Malcolm Simmons there. I've heard that Perry Thompson's caught a couple punt returns and stuff back there too. No slight to them. It's just there's different weights on players, and I think experience and maturity has a lot to do with that. And with the Deion thing, I mean, you could do that with a guy like Jarquez Hunter. He says, okay, this guy's played enough football. I'm not worried about when he does get hit in a real game, but there's no reason to go full blast at him right now in fall practice with a guy like Eugene Asante. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. It feels like it is a lose-lose situation for both sides. Again, it's somebody that's polished. It's somebody that has proven himself. And Coach Freeze talked about it with in the standpoint of NIL this afternoon or this morning, but it also refers to what we're talking about right now. You have to earn the ability to have that. You don't want to say special treatment by any means, but again, it's somebody that
I think it is
that has a star next to their name, especially on their offensive units. Just my bad. Sorry, I didn't mean to disagree with you there. But hearing how Jarquez wants to be able to be the punt returner, Coach Freeze said that if it was today, Jeremiah Cobb would be the guy returning kicks. That being said, today is today, and as he alluded to, we're still 3+ weeks away from it. Another thing that I was very happy to hear about was how complimentary he was of the big bodies up front. Again, we talked about the defensive line, but especially the offensive line. He named a bunch of names that have really emerged during fall camp, saying that even some of the backups, they'll be able to fill that role. They can play multiple positions on the interior or outside on the tackles. And then the D-line, he said there might not be, you know, a Marcus Harris or somebody that can just absolutely blow up every single hole by himself. But he said there's 6 or 7, even 8 possible guys that with limited snaps can be absolutely explosive, and it just adds even more weapons to that bag that DJ Durkin has to force negative plays and to wear down an offensive line.
And the way that I see it with that in particular is that gives you 7 or 8 different options and opportunities for somebody to emerge, right? Because somebody's going to. And if you don't, then you got a bigger problem. But one of those guys, or maybe multiple of those guys, are going to progress quicker than the others or take that next step or become that dude this year. And that's what you're looking for. And the fact that, no, you may not have it today on August 9th, but you may have it in October. One of those guys, like a Philip Bleedy, who Free said is one of the strongest dudes he's ever coached. Right. Like, somebody like that has the opportunity to step up, be the guy when the games matter the most.
And one of the biggest things that I love Hugh Freeze for, and we've talked about this a while back, how everybody's so worried about the 1, the 2, the 3 in fall camp. Coach Freeze has said it multiple times. He said it again this afternoon that there's not necessarily a depth chart with everybody. And I don't think right now there has to be, at least not for the week 1 of fall camp. Obviously, you have a couple of those guys that either from the transfer portal or are a little bit more polished and are progressing. But again, as you mentioned, there's going to be time for these kids to emerge. Another great question that was asked was about redshirting, and if redshirting is essentially out the window now that kids can transfer, and if they don't like what they hear, and how he was sitting there saying, man, if I could get Van Jefferson or DK Metcalf on the phone to talk about these types of how good redshirting was for these guys, then it would just be, you know, absolutely amazing. But how he can't even necessarily think about any of that right now. But it just goes back to that offensive line or the defensive line. Those kids can get four games now with the new transfer or with the new redshirt rules. You can get four games. So you don't have to go into the offseason or even go into fall camp with the mentality of, hey, we like where you're at, just not yet. You have four games now to decide, and then you can start having those conversations week by week.
And if in the way that I look at it, and this may be an older school way of thinking, but I still think it applies in sports like this. If, and everybody's situation is different, let me just claim that, everybody's situation is different. But if you are trying to hang on to dudes that are flaky and just are running at the first sign of trouble and don't want to be there and just want to see if the grass is greener at the first sign of an issue, then, you know, it's the old saying of, okay, well, do you really want them on your team anyway? Are they going to make you better in the long run? Is their skill set or their potential, is it worth the possible headache that player could be? That doesn't mean that that applies to everybody, but as a head coach, if you freeze, or any of these head coaches, like, no, you don't have time. You don't have time to worry about that, man. You're trying to do what's best for you, your program, and your players. And if they can't see that, if they don't believe it, then that's on them, and they have every right to feel that way. But he can't hang around and just beg players to stay.
Yeah.
Any coach can't do that. If you want to be here, great. If not, move on.
Well, and I think that's such a big part of the recruiting process now, is making sure, especially with Coach Freeze and all of the assistants talking about the culture fit and how we're going to go out and find the right guys. That's one of those things that you weigh your options of, hey, is this going to be a fit for us, not only schematically, but within the program, within the football team, making sure that you aren't going to have to deal with any of those issues elsewhere.
And I would like to think that those guys on the recruiting trail are preaching that. It's like, hey, if you come here, this isn't a one-year rental. This is, we want you to be here for 2, 3, 4 years, and then we want to send you to the next level. And if you set that expectation, no, you can't avoid it altogether, but you can really slow it down and you can drop that percentage by a lot. And I'll say this before we get to break. In this new era of college football, college athletics for that matter, the programs, and I may have said this before on the show, the programs that figure that out, find a way to do that, will be the ones that have long-term success. The ones that can keep players around, avoid having guys leave in and out consistently, and really defeat the transfer portal, those are the ones that are going to be good. Those are the ones that will win championships in the next two decades.
The transfer portal has to become the polish on a team. It cannot be the Band-Aid that holds a team together, because it will not stick. It will not work. You have to find them somebody like a Keandre Lambert Smith. You have to go out and get a veteran receiver to take care of these young guys, but it's not you're just going out and getting 3 or 4 senior receivers that you hope are great for 1 year and then, okay, well, thanks for your time.
Yeah, back to square one.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, we'd love to get your thoughts here as we're off and running here on the Free for All Friday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. Auburn has a practice tomorrow. The media gets a chance to visit, and Hugh Freeze gave us some insight on what we might see. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Friday edition of On the Line. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Gardens. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7. And I mentioned that there is a media viewing window at practice tomorrow. That is inside the stadium at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And there was a question today about what we might be able to see tomorrow. I'm not 100% sure how much time we get. I will be there. We are allowed to be there at 10 a.m. And Freeze did say there would be some scrimmaging. There would be some kind of one-on-ones. There's going to be a little contact. He said he wasn't 100% sure exactly what was going to be there, but what we were looking for was the confirmation of there will be some sort of scrimmage going on.
There will be. It was funny when he was asked the question of, hey, what is tomorrow going to look like? And he said, I don't know.
Like,
and again, it just goes back to you can tell that he is stressed about something like that just because of he mentioned of how there were some things this past week, either watching film or that just happened live, that could have been very scary with the team and a couple players. Again, he didn't necessarily name those players, but the scare of the team, the scare of some really talented guys on the roster. So I'll be interested to see what he looks like tomorrow during those few contact points, because he said we need to tackle. Like, we have to prepare to some extent, but again, health is such a big thing. And yeah, that was when he talked about CJ Baxter at Texas and how he's done for the year. And so, again, just health is something that he has stressed so much about.
He mentioned trying to, like, keep DBs off of receivers' backs and things like that, like when they're, you know, in pursuit of the football. Right. And just when they're trying to make plays and you've got guys being competitive, but there has to be some sort of balance. And that's such a hard job as a coach, especially it seems like with this particular group who is very competitive and very active and very, you know, just – go get it, see ball, get ball type of players. And you want those guys and you want them to be competitive. This is a good problem to have. Freeze may disagree Definitely. With this. It's easier to tell guys, hey, let's chill out just a second. It's still fall. It's still practice. I love your effort, but we got to keep ourselves safe, right? Rather than, hey, get off your you know what and like, show me that you care.
Right.
Like, show me that you want to be here. It doesn't sound like that is an issue. But what a nightmare it would be. It's like, man, we had two guys fighting for the football and they just came down wrong and a dude, you know, tore his ACL or whatever the case may be. Like, that's such a disheartening way to lose somebody. And again, though, Freeze is trying to find the balance of we have to be ready to play in the SEC, but we've got to get our guys to the SEC. And that's, man, that. I'm glad I'm not in that spot.
Again, it's such a fine line that you have to cross because, yeah, you want them to play on Saturdays, but as you're talking about, you have to get them to Saturdays. And you said it before I could. I think it's a very good problem to have. Again, Coach Freeze has talked about a number of the corners. He mentioned specifically that he thinks Kayan Lee is going to be the next Auburn NFL cornerback. And now you have some of these, the big body, the physical receivers that aren't necessarily just the ones that are trying to avoid contact at all points, you know, the little slot receivers. You have some physical guys that can go up and want to win those 50-50 balls. It's a good problem to have, as you mentioned, to tell them, hey, maybe play the ball more as soon as it gets to the receiver's hands. You know, fight through the ball, but don't fight through the receiver. Don't try and force those types of incompletions. Can you believe he said this stat too? There's 9 wide receivers on scholarship. 7 of them are new faces catching passes.
Yeah, I think our own Dan Peck from The Drive asked that question and had that stat.
Keandre Lambert-Smith, Sam Jackson, Camden Brown, Camden Brown's a returner, but he mentioned those guys and their abilities that he's seen, but then all of the new guys and all of the weapons that he has, I think especially in the fall, not wearing down anybody in specific too much is going to be one of those big things. Again, that's why we named, 9 of those receivers. You have plenty of guys that can take reps. There's no need to ride Keandre Lambert-Smith till he's buried in the ground in fall camp.
Tomorrow I'll be looking for who is on the outside, who's on the inside, who gets the assignments defensively in terms of receivers and then DBs. I'm looking at rotation on the offensive defensive line. I mean, who gets out there? And I'm not going to take it for everything. Some people will, and I'm telling you not to listen to that. It's whoever takes a lot of snaps tomorrow does not mean that that's the guy. Run with them, and they're going to be the greatest thing to ever live. Like, just take it for – take it with a grain of salt is all I'm telling you. And
take it for the fact that it means they're healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good sign that they're actually competing in a scrimmage, because Free said today there will be a couple of guys that probably won't. I would imagine KLS and Keontae Scott would be a couple of those guys that probably don't go full live tomorrow. And looking forward to it, though. This will be our first real time to see them in real-time action in scrimmage-like and looking at all the different position battles for Auburn football. Halfway through hour number one, when we come back, how about some updates on conference realignment? Have you forgotten where people went? Good. Us too. We'll remind you and keep you updated when football season returns. We'll have that for you when we come back on ESPN 106.7.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Halfway through hour number one here on the Friday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, joined by Christian Griffin in the studio. And we've been wanting to do this on the show for a long time, and I told you yesterday that we were going to get around to doing it, and I think it's an appropriate time. It's definitely an appropriate conversation, because with the start of this new college football season, which is just a few weeks away, college football's played this month, by the way, it's a good idea to sit down and just have a little reminder, a refresher, if you will, of all of the conference realignment. Who left who went where, and all of that, because it's impossible to keep up with it all. And as much as this is for you, the listener, it's just as much for us, a good refresher, and just to say, oh yeah, I forgot about that. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to go through these major conferences, maybe try to get to some of the other ones as well, talk about the newcomers, who left, who's in, and maybe of those newcomers, who can make the most impact in year one and maybe down the road as well. And so we'll start, Christian, with the obvious, the Southeastern Conference, one that has been beaten to death, it seems like. The fact that, hey, did you know that Texas and Oklahoma are here? Did you know that they're in the SEC?
When was that? When did that happen?
It happened just a little bit ago. Okay. It's been known for a couple of years, but it just went official July 1st. I don't know if you knew that.
I saw that Pitbull was in Austin, but I wasn't sure if that was the reason or anything.
Side note, speaking of Pitbull, did you see the news? Did you see what Pitbull, the art, for those listening, the artist, the rapper, he bought the naming rights to, I believe, FIU's college football stadium, Florida International. He spent, I don't even remember the number. It wasn't insane, but he bought the naming rights as an artist, as a musician, rapper, whatever you want to call him. He bought the naming rights to a college football stadium.
Here we go. He will pay the school $1.2 million per year for 5 years.
Why do I feel like that's not that bad?
We can fork that up. Right?
I mean, it wouldn't make a dent in my bank account, but you know.
But yeah, just he
I
says
mean, it is FIU. But
he
still
says that he loves everything that FIU is about, being underdogs, and it's the idea that he came from the 305, as he is known as Mr. 305, and so
Mr. Worldwide. How about
I mean,
that's
I guess
hilarious.
It's something we've referred to as that stupid money. If you have that stupid money
there's
and you can
else money.
You can do something like that to where you make an impact. I mean, sure.
Yeah, sorry. That just sparked my I saw that the other day and it sparked my memory. And again, this goes back to a conversation I had months ago that in sports anything can be bought. Everything has a price in sports. Just remember that, folks. And for all of you longtime listeners of this show, what's it all about? It's about the money.
A dollar sign.
Boom. Okay, so anyway, not to go on that for too long. Yes, in the SEC, everything is the same. Nobody left the SEC, but of course, Oklahoma and Texas are now a part of the conference. And I know there's been so much conversation, but I want to have everybody sit back and remember when this news broke and when we started to learn, oh, wow, Texas and Oklahoma are coming to the SEC. That's a huge deal. That's a huge deal for two programs that have always been right there next door. They compete against the SEC for the entire careers, right? The entire existence of those programs. But for those two in particular to be added, I mean, you're talking two of the biggest brands in college football.
It easily is, and one of the most marketable rivalries in college football. These two teams were essentially the forefront of all of this conversation that we're having now with the college football expansion, with the realignment, with everything that is happening with college football. These two teams were kind of the quote-unquote founding fathers for everything, because once they made the jump, it was, oh, okay, other conferences started looking at other teams and having those conversations, and now we are where we are. And it is two premier brands that are joining the most prestigious conference, and you, in a weird way, it feels like it's time. I feel like it's
I think so.
It's worth the argument of, again, keeping the SEC the SEC, but when you have brands as big as that, and again, dollar signs pay a big factor into all of this, but I think it's going to be very beneficial for both parties, and that's why they made it happen.
I would say Texas probably makes the immediate impact more than Oklahoma does, but I truly feel this way. It could be either one of these programs that make the biggest splash in the next decade for the Southeastern Conference, because while Texas is ahead of Oklahoma right now, if Oklahoma could very easily catch up and take that spot from them and be a home wrecker in this conference, if you will. So immediately this season, yeah, it's Texas, but I put them on the exact same level for longevity-wise for biggest impact and biggest newcomer to the SEC.
And it's crazy, too, because you think of Texas being so much further and so much more ahead than Oklahoma, but I don't remember exactly what it was, but Oklahoma's winners in like five of the last seven Red River rivalries.
They won last year.
And yes, and what a game. I got to be a part of it. It was amazing. Dylan Gabriel throwing the touchdown in the back corner.
That was a crazy game.
It was absolutely amazing. And an even better game to be a part of when you didn't care who won. Just an electric atmosphere, something that's non-comparable to a normal rivalry with the stadium being 50-50. But even the recruiting classes, Oklahoma is right there. So you think that Texas is leaps and bounds ahead of Oklahoma, but they really are closer than everybody seems. Texas just gets the postseason highlights, I think. I think Texas almost gives the idea or the image of the big brother. But I would agree with you, at least coming on, I think Texas is going to make the more immediate impact, especially, or maybe not especially, but at least in the world of football.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Oklahoma and the other talents that they're bringing, I mean, the four-peat in softball, I think Oklahoma is a more prestigious brand in basketball, at least over the past couple of years, I would say. That's, I guess you could say, a hot take when you compare Trae Young and Kevin Durant at rival schools, but I feel like Oklahoma, at least postseason-wise, has made a little bit bigger of an impact. But
Blake Griffin at OU.
Yeah, worst dunk contest winner of all time, jumping over the Kia. Just a promotional brand.
You weren't a fan of him jumping over the hood of the Kia?
Where he would have landed anyway. Just a straight Kia ad to win. But hey,
it worked. We're still talking about it.
Dollar signs.
Advertising works, ladies and gentlemen.
All that it is. Yeah, hit us up if you.
Yeah, 334-321-1390. Anyway.
But again, I would agree with you, at least from the standpoint of the SEC. I think Texas makes that more immediate impact.
All right, let's move on to the ACC. I'll run through these schools. I didn't have to remind you of the SEC, but just in case you've forgotten. All right, ACC quickly: Boston College, Clemson, Duke, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Miami, North Carolina, NC State, Pitt, Syracuse, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest. Notre Dame is there, but they do not compete with them in football because they're Notre Dame and they're better than everybody else. And the newcomers for the ACC: Stanford, Cal, and SMU. That seems to be the one that most people forget about, myself included, because SMU is one of those sleeping giants, or just one of those programs that has history, right? But they've just never gotten to that point. And it's tough for an SMU to do that, but what an opportunity it is for Cal, Stanford, and for SMU to be joining the ACC. And a note, nobody left that conference, so they now have 18 members of the ACC.
Jeez, I saw something that said that Cal travels more distance than 27 or 28 NFL teams do this year.
Gosh.
Just, I mean, legitimately.
Yeah, but this'll work long for the long term.
Right, especially a Tuesday night women's volleyball game, Jesus. Right, to go play Louisville or to go play Florida State. You know, just a quick travel across the country, four time zones and everything.
Yeah, take the red eye. You'll be fine.
Right. To make the most immediate impact, I'm going to go with SMU. I really am.
I
Texas
like it.
Recruiting. Rhett Lashley, a name that many Auburn fans would remember. They won the American last year, beating Tulane. They went 9-0 in conference, finished 11-3. Recruiting in Texas is, I mean, as big as it has always been. So not that SMU was a much smaller figure when in comparison to those Texas schools, but now that you are joining a much more prestigious conference, you're getting a lot more legitimacy with your name and a team that, again, it proved in their previous conference, I expect them to make a big jump in the ACC year one.
I like it. I like the pick of SMU. My fear with the ACC is it's not done changing. And they may have not have had departures this year, but they are going to have departures. And it's the two schools, maybe three or four, that everybody's talked about pretty much this entire time. And there were a lot of questions for Greg Sankey at SEC Media Days, who shut it down pretty quickly. But, I mean, that's just what he does. I mean, I think Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, for sure. I think those three are the ones that are going to be on their way out at some point. I don't know where they're going to go. I don't know when they're going to go, but that's just kind of my feeling on that. SMU is probably my pick to make the most immediate impact just because of where the programs are for Stanford and Cal. And this is in terms of college football, and I know we've dipped into a little bit of the other sports, but in college football in particular, I'll take SMU as well. This is where it starts to get a little fun. When you look into the new look Big 12, because the two big dogs are gone, right? Texas and Oklahoma are no longer there. But it's funny because you have some familiar faces that are back in the Big 12. They have 16 conference members in the Big 12. Those follow as Baylor, Iowa State, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas Tech, West Virginia. Remember, new teams came in last year, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF, the Fighting Gus Malzahns, and the new teams coming in this year, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado. How about that? That is such a intriguing conference,
That is an all-over-the-map conference.
You better believe it.
When you think about the ACC and how far some of those teams are having to go, these teams might not necessarily have to go as far mileage, but you're going both directions as far as you possibly can go. I mean, it is an all-around, all-United States conference. Regarding the biggest impact year one,
it could be year two. I'll give you year two for those teams last year.
I think year one is more important from the standpoint of a specific quarterback that I am hoping and banking on has a healthy year, and that is Cameron Rising at Utah.
Yep.
I feel like, again, with Texas and Oklahoma making their way out, those two teams, again, they had the mentality of, if we run the table, we're going to at least play for a conference championship. It took, realistically, Texas and Oklahoma doing what they have done before last year, really, to where it was losing a couple games that you shouldn't lose and all of a sudden eliminating yourself from contention, losing one of those 11 a.m. kickoffs at a game where you don't really want to be, you're just trying to get by. So with these newcomers coming in, give me Utah, give me Cameron Rising at one of the more beautiful Rice-Eccles stadiums in college football.
I would love to see the Big 12 get back to a competitive, respectful level, because not that it's not a good conference. I mean, it's one of the Power Four conferences now. That's part of the conversation. We'll get into it in a little bit. But, man, and you're right. The last handful of years that Texas and Oklahoma were in that conference, it was those two and then everybody else. And, yeah, you've had a quick resurgence, or I guess emergence, of Kansas because of what happened there. And they've had some electric players roll through the last handful of years. But I mean, I want the days of Baylor being good again, and Oklahoma State, and TCU, and Texas Tech. I mean, those types of programs, even West Virginia when they were kind of rolling out in the 2000s. I mean,
Tavon Austin.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like that time. Oh, even a Kansas State where they may not win the conference, but you do not want to play them on a weekly basis. Like, that's what I want the Big 12 to get back to. And I have a good feeling that adding a Houston to that, or even a Cincinnati, and then you're bringing in Utah, Colorado, if they find a way to turn it around out there and get something going. But even in Arizona, Arizona State, like, no, those teams are not consistently good, but when they are good, they're really good. And I just want it to be more balanced in the Big 12, and it gets such a bad rap, and they earned it, don't get me wrong, about let's just score 50 points and see who can do it first. And not having the hard-hitting defense and lockdown, you know, bleeding and grinding it out like there used to be, I feel like, decades ago.
Yeah, no, I would definitely back that up, because, again, it felt like Texas and Oklahoma kind of ran the conference, and then it was whoever was the B team that won two or three games that they should have won, but B didn't allow the slip-ups. That's really kind of what it was. They didn't allow the upsets. They played their schedule like they should have. And now you're seeing a couple of these new teams, again, with the new conference. We've seen how well UCF has done in the recruiting windows and everything. So a team like that could make some noise as well. It's just so weird thinking just a couple years ago, Cincinnati didn't make the playoff because they were a Group of Five team. And
then they made it.
And then, yeah, and now it's just the conversation of not only are they a new team, they're one of the returning teams in the Big 12. Such a weird day that we live in.
We'll continue on as we are refreshing you and reminding you and whatever else word you want to throw in there. Just with all the conference realignment as we get closer to the start of the college football season, one more big conference to go over, and man, it's wild over there in the Big Ten. We'll talk about that. The Pac-2 that is fizzled out. That's the nicest way to say it. We'll have that and more as we wrap up hour number one when we come back.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one as we continue updating you on what has happened in conference realignment around college football, because there's been a lot of movement. And as I was reading through this article and kind of taking my notes getting into the show today, I forgot how much alignment and realignment there was last year when the season started. And you see there was so many teams that started a new conferences last year. And we're getting into the Big Ten. And again, just to tell you who's in the conference: Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Maryland, Michigan, Michigan State, Minnesota, Nebraska, Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Rutgers, and Wisconsin. Nobody has left this conference, but they now have 18 full members because of the newcomers: Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA.
Two Southern Cal teams. What a jump that is to the Big Ten, where you think of just hard-nosed power football. You think of that's where offensive linemen and defensive linemen and tight ends are bred in that Big Ten landscape. And now all of a sudden you have USC, who with Caleb Williams couldn't even win 8 games last year because of how bad their defense was. And it's just what a weird schedule. I like it, but it's a little bit different. I think Oregon is, if we're talking newcomers, I think Oregon's going to run that conference. It's going to become Oregon, and then I think it's Ohio State will be that second team. At least that's what you're kind of expecting because of everything that they have thrown at just about every single player in college football to try and cover up their tears from the Michigan national championship, which is turning into a even crazier story now.
Yeah, I talked about that the other day.
With, what was it, Harbaugh? If he ever comes back, we'll be suspended 4 games.
Honey,
and
he ain't ever coming back.
It's crazy that he just decided to leave.
Yeah, wow. Isn't that wild how they've been trying to get him for 2 or 3 years and now was the time? Isn't that crazy?
Just, yeah.
What a joke the NCAA is. What an absolute joke.
A couple of weeks ago, I think it was last Friday, actually, Uncle T-Bone and I talked about the Kentucky postseason ban because of some guys that got paid for moving hay bales or whatever it was that they weren't allowed to do. But, you know, I'm glad that we have our priorities.
We're getting the big dogs, man.
Check.
We're getting the blue bloods taken care of.
But, no, Dan Lanning and Oregon, especially now with Bob Knight aging quickly, saying that he wants to see his team win a national championship. The owner of Nike.
Phil Knight.
Phil Knight, yes, sorry.
Bob Knight's the legendary Indiana basketball coach.
That is right. Phil Knight wants to see his team win a national championship. You've heard the unlimited NIL deals. Now with Dan Lanning, Dylan Gabriel, that team is everything you would expect to be a playoff entry and a playoff contender in the national championship.
Imagine if Oregon, USC, UCLA, and Washington hit their peak and get back to all of them being relevant.
And then you include Penn State in that mix as well. I mean, that could be a 5 wide or 6 deep wide for a divisionless Big Ten.
It's a big if, though. It's a huge if. As we are wrapping up hour number one, when we come back in hour two, we will put a bow on this conversation and then get into SEC over-unders. We'll be making our predictions for the 2024 season. That's all coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two. Final hour of the week, man. It is here. It's upon us. And as Uncle T-Bone always says, if you're at the office, tell the boss man or lady you're going home, you're done. Go get you a cold snack and get into the weekend. We appreciate you being with us here on this Friday afternoon. No Uncle T-Bone, but Christian Griffin is joining me in the studio, and we're excited to get into this second hour. If you missed any of hour number one, we reacted and kind of broke down Hugh Freeze's press conference from this morning. He had some fascinating things to say about fall camp so far, as we are 1 week in to fall practice for Auburn, and they do have a practice tomorrow that the media will be able to be a part of. There will be some scrimmages in that, and so that'll be coming up on Monday's show. I'll be able to tell you everything that I see over there at Jordan-Hare Stadium tomorrow. And then what's been a lot of fun is reminding you and just sort of updating you on the new look conferences around college football because of all the movement and all of the realignment that is happening. We'll put that to bed here in just a second. We got a few more conferences to get through really quickly. And then here in hour two, we are diving deep into the over-unders win totals for the SEC. I had a little bit of commentary about this yesterday. We talked to Chris Gordy about this yesterday, but we are giving our official predictions for the season over-under win totals according to ESPN Bet. We will have that for you here in hour number two. But if you missed any of the first hour, go and listen to the podcast later on today. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So thank you so much to them for bringing you the second hour of the show each and every day, and we always appreciate the Orthopedic Clinic. Phone lines are open in the second hour. Would love to get you a part of the show. 334-321-1390. Your predictions for win totals over or under for the SEC teams, according to ESPN. You can call in there, or you can shoot us a text if you have a quick prediction at 334-784-1067. Christian, let's get this conversation knocked out really quickly. Just looking at some of these other conferences that have changed drastically in the last handful of years, and the last major conference that we need to talk about, which is no longer a major conference, the Pac-12, Pac-2, whatever you want to call it, with Oregon State and Washington State, and that's it.
Yeah, I think that Washington State is going to run the conference. Just they are going to run the table. Wazoo throwing the ball 80 times a game, continuing the Mike Leach offense. They're going to absolutely roll.
I don't know. They did make an agreement, and people forget about this. There was an agreement that was made with the Mountain West to where Oregon State and Washington State will each have their football teams play a game against either the Oregon State Beavers or the Cougars of Washington State. So every team from the Mountain West will play either Oregon State or Washington State. And in case you forgot who the Mountain West Conference is, that's Air Force, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State. Wow, there's a lot of states in here. Nevada, New Mexico, San Diego State, San Jose State, UNLV, Utah State, Wyoming, and then Hawaii for football. There's only 11, but feels like a lot more than that. And so all of those teams will play either Oregon State or Washington State. How many times can I say that word in 5 minutes? the AAC, and this will be the last one before we move on. Well, we can do the Sun Belt too.
Fun Belt.
Oh, stop. AAC, this conference has been shaken up to its core because of the teams that left this to go to the Big 12. You have other teams that have joined the conference. All of these were from a year ago. These all started last year. East Carolina was there, Memphis, South Florida, SMU, Temple, Tulane, and Tulsa. All of these schools joined the AAC last year. Charlotte, FAU, North Texas, Rice, UAB, and UTSA. That's a huge addition for the AAC. It may not completely make up for losing Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, but those are solid programs that got added to a conference that is going to be looking, Christian, for some sort of college football playoff spot.
Yeah, they definitely are, and I don't think there's going to be a newcomer that is going to be in that legitimate conversation. If it is going to be a newcomer, I think UTSA. I really like the Roadrunners to be able to run that tournament or to run the conference. If that is the case, where you pick a new one. Side note: one of my Road to Glory players went there in the College Football 25 video game.
UTSA.
One of the stadium is absolutely beautiful.
Really,
it is absolutely amazing.
I don't know if I've ever seen it.
So nice. But I think you are going to have a playoff team from this conference, and I think it's Memphis. I think Memphis or Boise State that are going to be the first of the group of five teams that make a college football playoff, and I think it'll be the Memphis Tigers. I really do. I think they're going to run the AAC. That American team is down a little bit again, especially now that SMU and UCF and Cincinnati are out the door. So it becomes the real conversation of how good is Tulane going to be. And they both lost their quarterback and their top running back this past year. So give me Memphis to run that conference.
I love it. I love it. Okay, let's move on. Let's get to the conversation that we have promised for hour number two. And this is going to carry for most of the second hour. And again, we want you to be a part of this, whether it's on the phone lines or in the text box. Your predictions for over-under win totals for SEC teams in 2024. And I think it's appropriate to start from the bottom, Christian, and work our way up. We can do that in this on this graphic, and we're on ESPN.com. They released an article yesterday with updated betting lines from their betting service, ESPN Bet. And this graphic has win totals, over-unders, conference championship odds, playoff odds, and then college football national championship odds.
I would also like to formally apologize to the University of Texas El Paso because it is UTEP's stadium that is beautiful. It's in between two mountains, so you see it on either side. So any minor fans out there,
you just made somebody really mad.
I know it.
I hope you did.
I apologize about that.
I just Googled it. Whoa, I've never seen that.
The Sun Bowl? It's pretty sweet.
Maybe I have seen that. I didn't remember that's what it looked like, though. That's pretty awesome.
But again, formal apology to...
Oh, no, I'm about to go compare.
The University.
I'm comparing.
Well, UTSA plays in the Alamo Dome.
Oh.
So,
Oh, that's right. Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, that's not comparable.
100%, 100% on me. We can scratch that when you listen to the podcast tomorrow.
Well, so. It ain't getting scratched from live radio, buddy. All right, let's start from the bottom and work our way up. We're going to do not a deep dive because there's 16 teams and we only have less than an hour, but we are going to give our thoughts on all of these teams. I'm going to write it down. We're going to make our official predictions. We've done this, I think, just about every year that I've been here doing this show, and it's a lot of fun. And so, Christian, take it away with the Commodores of Vanderbilt, who... currently sit, according to ESPN Bet, their over-under win total is 2.5.
I think so. Are we doing this to where we're picking an over-under for everyone, but we're picking one or two that if there was one that you had to hammer the line on, that we would take?
Yes. I say we pick two that if you had to put the house on it, right?
Okay.
If had to put your next meal on it, that you would pick two of the 16 that you just feel is absolutely going to happen. Can be an over, can be an under, can be one of each, can be both. It doesn't matter to me.
Perfect.
So we'll start from the bottom and work our way up. Start with Vanderbilt 2.5.
Well, why in the world would we start a segment where I'm not throwing the house?
Whoa!
Vanderbilt Commodores will win more than 2.5 games this year.
Wow.
And again, if they will heavily be underdogs in all of their conference games. So the first games that you look at are their outer conference games. Virginia Tech at home. Alcorn State is a win. Georgia State is a very winnable game.
They just lost
their head coach. It is at Georgia State, but there's a lot of moving pieces for that team. And not to shed light in a very dark tunnel, but Mr. Pavia, who ran and threw and did about every single thing that he wanted to do as the New Mexico State quarterback inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, will be leading the Vanderbilt Commodores, as well as their former head coach is now on the coaching staff at Vanderbilt as well. And Vanderbilt comes to Auburn. Just throwing that out there, not making any sort of expectations or any sort of prediction for anything like that, but we saw the talent that he had inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. So Commodores, brand new football stadium, I'm taking the over. I'm hammering the over.
Gosh, man.
Ball State is that other game, the non-conference game. So again, you win, you beat Alcorn State, you beat Ball State. You find one
Georgia
more.
Georgia State is your make or break game for going over or under. I'll give it to them. I'll give them the over. It's bad that I don't feel good about it, but I'll just because it's like, come on, man. Give me something to cheer for. You know what I'm saying? I'll take Vandy over 2.5 wins. The fact that that is a legitimate line in this conference is pretty telling, but we'll take Vanderbilt over 2.5.
What happens if, for some reason, the Hokies of Virginia Tech do not perform like they are expecting to, and Vanderbilt starts 3-0.
the world would burn down.
Oh my goodness. I remember they started 2-1 a couple years ago with a win at Hawaii, and everybody was losing their mind. So
yeah,
Vanderbilt Commodores over 2.5. Baby.
I love it. Okay, let's get a couple of teams in here. You've got Mississippi State at 4.5. We'll loop a couple of these in. We'll start with Mississippi State because, look, I'm going to be real. You look at Mississippi State at 4.5 wins on this 2024 season, and is it crazy to say that I may take the under? I just don't know, Mississippi State, man.
Where you feel like they are they're always good for one upset a year, especially with the circumstances of who Mississippi State is in Starkville. Some wild things happen there, but without Mike Leach and without Will Rogers, who is now the quarterback for Washington, people forget about that one. I'm with you. Again, this is not something that I'm too confident on, but even their non-conference schedule, you're going to Arizona State Week 2, which is not an easy game. Toledo is not an easy look-ahead game before conference play. And then you start off Florida, Texas, Georgia. That's a tough 1-2-3 because I feel like Florida will match up well with Mississippi State, and it just doesn't get easier as you obviously progress through the SEC slate. So, gosh, I mean,
I'm taking the under.
I will as well. I think they'll get 4. And so, yeah, I'll that's take about the under with them as well.
That's about where I sit. I mean, I'm going to give Mississippi State wins against Eastern Kentucky, against Toledo. I'll give them a win over Arkansas at home.
And then UMass.
On October 26th, and then, yeah, have them beat UMass. But they're not going to beat Tennessee on the road after that. They're not going to beat Missouri at home, and they're not going to go to Ole Miss and beat them in the Egg Bowl there in Oxford. So, yeah, I'll take Mississippi State under 4.5, and you will do the same as I write this down, under 4.5. Okay, next team on the list, and we'll probably have more in-depth as we get to some of those teams that have higher win totals. But Arkansas, man, that's just another team where I have – absolutely no faith. My buddies in Arkansas were telling me don't buy into this team. They're not going to be that great. I'm taking under 4.5 for the Arkansas Razorbacks.
I think a better bet for this Arkansas team is how many games over under 6.5 where Sam Pittman is still the head coach.
I like that.
And I mean,
I'll take the 6.5.
One, two, three, four, five. So in between the Tennessee and the Arkansas game, I think under, because bold prediction. I think UAB, we talked about this last week. I wouldn't be surprised if this UAB team goes into Fayetteville and comes out with an upset.
That's brutal.
Again, a non-conference, you go Arkansas Pine Bluff, which you feel like you want to feel confident that Arkansas would be able to win a game like that. It's going to be one of those week one games to where it's, oh gosh, it's a game in the fourth quarter. But I think Arkansas will handle that one. You go to the Fighting Mullets, if you want to say, with Gundy at Oklahoma State. I mean, I think that's going to be a loss just because of how good that run game is going to be. A loss at UAB, back-to-back losses to the state of Alabama, hopefully with UAB and then Auburn, and then again, right into the gauntlet. Texas A&M, Tennessee, LSU. Pittman's gone by then. Then you go Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Texas, Louisiana Tech, and Missouri. So
at Missouri.
I'm in agreement with you that – it doesn't necessarily make great radio that we're agreeing with each other with everything, but
no, we'll
I'm
get,
agreeing
we'll,
with you.
Yeah, we'll get to differencing opinions in a little bit, but some of these are just – they feel like gimmies, but you always know that there's going to be one that doesn't pan out or, like, one that we're completely wrong. And you know what? I think Mississippi State could be that team. Other folks believe that Florida is that team, and that's where we move next because they also have a 4.5 win total. And I talked to Chris Gordy about this yesterday, and we may need to get to break just so we have a little bit more time. I talked to Chris Gordy about this yesterday of Locked On SEC, and there are so many people, especially when we were in Dallas for SEC Media Days, that believe Florida is better than people are giving them credit for. He believes, too. He said, look, I think people are getting hung up on the schedule. People are overlooking or maybe underlooking because they can't get past how hard that schedule is That's a really, really talented Florida team, and we'll talk about them when we get back as we are underway in hour number two, making our official SEC win total predictions over or under. According to ESPN Bet, you can be a part of the show. Shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. We'll have more of this when we come back here on ESPN 1067.
You are on the line on ESPN 1067. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on with our over-under predictions for the SEC this season in college football. You can follow along. We're using the article on ESPN.com. It may be ESPN Plus, so if you don't have that, apologies. But we're giving you all the information that you need. So we are making our predictions based off the betting line win totals around the SEC. So far, we are in agreement in the bottom portion of the conference. Both of us have Vanderbilt going over 2.5 wins, Mississippi State and Arkansas both going under 4.5. And
you got to star my Vanderbilt one because that's that's my house pick.
Yeah, that is your house pick. Yep, you're right. There you
go. Or at least one of the
two.
One of the two.
Yeah. And if you have more, you have more, but at least got to have two. And the other team that gets looped into the 4.5 win total conversation is Florida. And I was telling you about them before we went to break. I've been a Debbie Downer on the Florida Gators because of that schedule, but they are talented. They are a good football team. The question is Billy Napier good enough to get them through? Can he survive this year? Because I believe that he could get it turned around, but man, what a horrible schedule to get in year three where your job is on the line.
It really, really is. And you're facing, if you consider Florida as one of the best teams in the state of Florida, you're playing the three other top teams in the state. You play Miami week one. You then play UCF at home on October 5th. And then you end the year, as you do every year, with Florida State. And those three teams, those are three out-of-conference games. Your only other out-of-conference game that you have is Samford. And so you want to feel like the Florida Gators will defeat Samford. But when you're playing, again, three of the top other teams in the state, Miami, UCF, and Florida State. And then you, how about the gauntlet of the SEC too? Might as well just throw that one in there. I see why 4.5 is the line. And yes, you want to feel like you don't want to overlook the schedule, but I can't do it.
It's hard not to.
They have them at minus 150 to go over, so a bunch of people are taking the over. I'm going to take plus money. I have the Florida Gators winning four games this year. I have them beating Samford. They'll beat Mississippi State. I have them beating Kentucky. And then I have them beating one of the two, either Miami or UCF. They will not beat both. I think it comes up to, because since there are so many question marks with those two teams, it's whichever team does not pan out.
This guy has a prediction about the Florida Gators and their head coach. K-Bag, what you got for me, man?
Hey, good afternoon, Jacob. I hate to say it, but you know, Florida's not going to have the patience to live through the ghosts of the 3M. Muschamp, McElwain, and Mullet. And it is not Billy Napier's fault at all. I really think he ought to be given an extra 2 years, you know, this year and next year. But unfortunately, with the lack of patience that there is in Gainesville, you know, they've almost turned into the Alabama of 25 years ago, cycling through the coaches through the Tuberville years and whatnot. But Billy Napier, after they get beat by 40 by Georgia in the world's largest cocktail party, he's going to be fired before he leaves Jacksonville.
Wow. So at that point, I mean, I would assume you'd have them losing to Miami in the opener, beating Samford. Do you have them beating A&M on September 14th in Gainesville, week three?
Honestly and truly, I think the Miami game's a wild card. And, you know, it would not surprise me if they beat Miami. But, you know, the Bull Gators, which is their top tier, you know, athletic department boosters and whatnot, they're not going to put up by getting beat by Georgia again, especially when they just get absolutely run out of Jacksonville.
That's fair.
And we're not even talking about the schedule that they have in November.
Oh, it's brutal. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I don't know who Florida pissed off or what athletic director, what Scott Strickland was thinking when he set this schedule, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. But good Lord, they're just gluttons for punishment with that schedule.
They really are. Georgia, November 2nd. Texas, November 9th. LSU, the 16th. Ole Miss, the 23rd. And ending it with Florida State. And
what, three of those five are on the road?
They play at Texas, at Florida State. The other three, or I guess you consider Georgia the neutral site game. So two of the four with the neutral site game are on the road.
Yeah, there is no way.
And especially
halfway through the month, he doesn't know. And I hate to say it, you know, I've always respected Florida. I've loved Spurrier and all of his press conferences, but man, they are just suffering like Bama was 25 years ago.
And it's for college football, K-Bag. It's sad to see. I'll admit it. It's sad to see because I think college football is better when Florida's better.
Nah, you ain't been to Gainesville, have you?
No, I haven't. I wish. I wish.
No, there ain't nothing in Gainesville. You know, worth gracing the Steelers for, trust me.
I believe you, K-Bag. Hey, great to hear from you, my man. Have a great weekend. Yes, sir. Good to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And I'll say this, and I'll let you continue your thought. Even if they do fire Billy Napier after the Georgia game, what does that do for you? Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying that against Kev. I'm just saying in general, like, you're not, I mean, Billy Napier, whoever's going to be the coach, you're going to lose those games. If you've lost to that point enough to your head coach to be fired, you're not going on the road to Austin to win. No. You're not going to beat LSU or Ole Miss, and you're definitely not going to Tallahassee to beat Florida State. Like, what a disaster that's going to be.
Right. It feels like it's almost one of those lose-lose situations to where, yeah,
when you're walking out
of Jacksonville, that's when you know, hey, we're not keeping you next year, but
good luck.
I feel like it wouldn't do – I mean, what assistant coach is going to step in and go, yeah, I'll take the interim job and go 0-5?
Yeah, literally. I mean, it's there's no winning there. But you took the under of Florida. I'm going to hop on for no particular reason. I'm going to hop on the public train and just say, for whatever reason, Florida figures something out.
Okay.
I'm not even saying they make a bowl game, but I'm thinking they at least get five games.
Five.
They get at least five. And you've got to win those games in state. Miami, UCF, Florida State. Like, you have to take two of those three, in my opinion, for this to be any sort of a good season for
right.
Florida.
So you have them 2 of 3. I have them 1 of 3.
That's basically
the difference because, again, with that schedule is absolutely brutal. You some crazy things happen in Florida, Tennessee, and Florida, Kentucky. But, again, yeah. So under for me, I'll take that plus money.
What a statement it would be for Florida to come out week one and beat Miami. Just not even a beat down, just to win the game, because not a lot of people are giving them credit. K-Bag said it's a wild card, but most people have written off and said Miami's winning that game by a lot.
Well, it's crazy, too, because Cristobal's not in too much of a different situation.
Good point.
Than Billy Napier is. Both of them feel like, I mean, that could be a must-win game for both of those programs.
We continue on giving our win predictions over-unders for the 2024 season. We got a lot more teams to get through when we come back.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Friday edition of On the Line, and we got a lot more teams to get through. We are doing our over-under predictions for the SEC for college football this season. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goetz. We have limped our way to 4 of our teams,
and
we have 12 to go.
Rapid
so,
fire.
Yeah, we're going to have to rapid fire on a couple of these. And so, if you have predictions, you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Going to shut the phone lines down just so we don't, you know, we love to hear from you, but if we don't have time. I mean, we got a lot of teams to get through, unfortunately. So, let's continue on. Let's do some rapid fire. South Carolina, 5.5 is their win total for the Gamecocks in 2024. Your predictions, Christian?
I think Sellers is going to be their guy. The freshman coming in.
You don't think it's Robbie?
the goggles, I do not. There is confirmation that it will not be Robbie as the number one. But yeah. Lenora Sellers, I think hearing everything, everybody down there is very, very excited. And I'm going to hop on the train as well. They're going to win at least six games. I'll take the over on 5.5.
I just, man, looking at their schedule, I can't do it. I can't do it for South Carolina. They'll win week one against Old Dominion.
Yeah, rain on, baby.
Oh, gosh.
Rain on.
Oh, gosh. They go to Kentucky week two, LSU week three, before they get Akron in the end of September. I'll have them beating Old Dominion. I'll have them beating Akron. They're not going to beat Ole Miss. They're not going to beat Alabama on the road. They're not going to beat Oklahoma on the road. They're not going to beat Texas A&M at home. They'll win at Vanderbilt, and they're not going to beat Missouri. So give me South Carolina to go under 5.5 wins, and it could be worse than that.
Mm. Old Dominion, Akron, Vanderbilt, Wofford. I feel like that's, you could say, four guaranteed for that. South Carolina, they beat Clemson. Are they going to do it again?
No. No, that's my answer. You went over 5.5?
I did.
Wow, okay. All right, moving on from South Carolina. Any other teams with 5.5? Don't believe so. So we'll move to the teams that have 6.5. That is the Kentucky Wildcats. Over, under 6.5 wins. ESPN has them making a bowl game, but not by much.
Football doesn't run into November.
No,
down there
it does
at Kroger Field, especially now with the postseason ban. But Brock Vandegrift, the Georgia transfer, is now in charge of the keys of the offense. Oh, man, and looking at this schedule as well, I mean, Southern Miss you think is a win, Ohio's a win, Vanderbilt's a win, there's three, Murray State is four. I like them over Florida, which gives them 5. Over is 130. I like it.
You're taking over. Kentucky's a 7-win football team in your mind.
I will take the over, but again, this is not anything that I would put any sort of the half water bottle that I have next to me.
That's fair. I'm going to go under. The only way they get over, and Auburn fans aren't going to like this, only way they get over that win total prediction is if they beat Auburn when the Tigers come to town in October. Mm. I think that is a huge game for Kentucky, given what is in front of them before that, because if they do beat Florida, and, I mean, they do have Georgia and Ole Miss on that schedule too, like, that could be the game of, is Kentucky still going to be a player in the SEC, or are they just going to lay over and die type of thing? So I'm going to take Kentucky under 6.5. You are taking them over 6.5. There we go. That's 3 in a row we've disagreed on. I like it. We move on.
Got to make content somehow, right?
You're learning quick, my man. As we move on, we will get to that Oklahoma Sooners team. 7.5 wins over under for the Sooners in their first year in the SEC. We have talked to death about how their schedule is one of, if not the hardest, in the SEC, right there with Florida, and the hardest in college football. 7.5 wins is going to be hard for that OU team. But again, for no particular reason, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think Oklahoma gets over 7.5 wins. That includes a loss to Auburn inside Jordan-Hare.
There we go. So you're playing that Auburn game is a non-factor for them in their win column.
Yep.
Both games, or both overs and under, both sitting at minus 115. So the country is very much split on making this decision. They played Temple and Houston week 1 and 2, Tulane, who I feel like has lost a little bit. I think they start 3-0. It's hard betting on teams like this, because you feel like you have an understanding of what Oklahoma is, but there's so many question marks on the teams that they're going to play. How good is Tennessee going to be with Nico Amayala? How good is LSU going to be with Brian Kelly in that recruiting program and their quarterback coming up? Like, how good are those teams going to be? We'll make it 4 straight. I will take Oklahoma. Okay. I'll take them winning 7 games. They'll get to a bowl, but this also speaks with Texas. But Oklahoma, they have those slip-ups in the middle of the year that you can get away with in their previous conference. You're not getting away with it in the SEC.
Yeah, and I think for them to get that over 7.5, I mean, yes, that's beating going 3-0. I think 4-0. I think they'll beat Tennessee week 4 before they come to Auburn. They'll hit a 2-game skid. You've got to beat South Carolina. You may have to go on the road and beat Ole Miss in Oxford or at Missouri. You got to win one of those, I think, if you're OU, to get over 7.5 wins. But I'll give them credit. I'll say that they do it. We're going to leave Auburn for the very end. We'll get to them at the end of the show. They currently sit at 7.5 wins for the 2024 season. We'll get to that in just a little bit. We continue on. Texas A&M and Tennessee. We'll loop these in at the same time. They both sit at 8.5 wins over under in 2024. They have odds to make the playoff and to win it. I mean, it's not great odds, but their over-under win total is 8.5 for Tennessee and Texas A&M.
That week one game, Texas A&M and Notre Dame, is going to speak so much on what a Connor Wigman A&M offense is going to look like. 8.5 is sitting at -120. If you take the Notre Dame game, you give them a win. McNeese State is a win in Bowling Green. There's two guaranteed. You're looking New Mexico State. You want to say this is a win?
For them, it would be. Yeah.
So there's three. So six of those games at Florida, Mississippi State at home, going to Missouri, going to LSU, going to South Carolina. I'm going to take the under. I am going to take the under on this Texas A&M team getting 8.5.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Year one with Mike Elko and just a lot of question marks. And it's been the easy term to say that Wegman is a health risk, and he is, but I think he'll play well. I just don't know or trust this Texas A&M team, and that's why I've been hard to predict the game that Auburn plays against them in late November. I don't know what they're going to be this year, but I don't think that they're a 9-win football team. I'll go ahead and tell you that right now. I'll take Texas A&M as well to go under 8.5 wins. How about Tennessee?
Which is against the public eye for A&M.
Which is kind of wild. Why are they so high on them?
It's not a very favorable schedule. You're playing a lot of road games in some really tough environments. So, again, yeah, both under 8.5 on that one. Tennessee, oh, man. What do you think?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, it comes down to what it always comes down to at Tennessee. Is this star-studded freshman going to pan out? I mean, is he going to be what they want him to be? I think Tennessee is on the verge of making the turn and getting around above the ledge, if you will, and being a legitimate threat, a dark horse college football playoff team. I think they could be that this year. Chattanooga, win. NC State, that's in Charlotte, win. Kent State, win. Their first big game is in Norman at Oklahoma. I don't think they win that. I just gave you Oklahoma winning that game a little bit ago. And hopefully all of our stuff kind of cross-references and makes sense. I mean, I know there may be some changes in there. But so that would give them 3, 1 loss to Oklahoma. I'll give them a win at Arkansas. That's 4. By that point, Florida comes to Neyland Stadium. Give me another win. That's 5 for Tennessee.
There's the toss-up right there.
Alabama in Knoxville. If you win that game, let's just skip past it for a second. You beat Kentucky 6, State is 7, UTEP is 8. Vandy's 9. I mean, look at that. If you beat Alabama, if you're Tennessee and you can take down Alabama, take care of business leading up to that, and beat the Crimson Tide on the third Saturday in October, watch out. Tennessee could be that third or fourth team from the SEC who's playing in the college football playoff.
Yeah, NC State, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Georgia are those 4 games that, even if you're generous when you're going through the schedule and you give them a loss, that puts them at 8. Their record or their prediction is 8.5. So you tell me that they can go 1-3 against those 4 teams to get 9? I like the over.
Yep, I do too. I think that's one of my most favorable overs, I think. Or just more favorable overs, for sure.
Is that your first house?
Ooh,
you haven't
no.
done it. You still have 2 more. I mean, we're over halfway there.
Heck no, I ain't trusting Tennessee with my house. Are you serious? Absolutely not. I ain't trusting Tennessee with anything. I will... No, I don't feel good about them yet. Actually, yeah, I do. I'm taking Texas A&M under 8.5.
There we go.
I'm putting my house on that one. I'm going to put my house on Texas A&M not being a 9-win football team this year.
So far, Texas A&M under 9 for you and Vanderbilt over 3.
Those are completely different.
And we still got one more we got to get to as well.
Yeah, we do. Okay, where does that leave us? We are getting into the 9.5 win column where there's a lot of teams jumbled into this category. We'll start with LSU, a team you brought up just a second ago. LSU, 9.5 over under for 2024. Garrett Nussmeier is back. You've got Brian Kelly, who is there as their head coach. A talented, talented football team. And a new look schedule for LSU because there's a lot of those SEC West teams that aren't on it this year.
And you have two different trips to Southern California. Week one. No,
oh,
I'm sorry.
About
sorry,
this.
Both are home. They are both coming to your place. My mistake.
I forgot about this weird schedule.
USC
man.
Versus LSU in week one.
Yeah.
And then UCLA, LSU a couple weeks later.
That USC game's in Vegas.
I was going to say, that is a neutral site game, actually. Yeah. Oh, man.
God, if you start 5-0 right there, you're feeling really good if you're LSU.
USC, you'll beat Nichols. If you like your chances against South Carolina. It is one of those 11 a.m. kicks, which is for some reason really scary. But then UCLA, South Alabama, you start 5-0. Even if you lose to Ole Miss, 5-1, a win at Arkansas. We'll skip Texas A&M. We'll say you lose to Alabama. You beat Florida. You beat Vanderbilt. That puts you right there at the 9 mark, and that gives you Oklahoma, Alabama, and Texas A&M as those games that you win one and you're over. Oh, I don't know if I can do it. I think they'll get 8. I think that they will get 9, but I don't think I can take over 9.5.
Yeah, that's, man, that is really, really tough. You're going to take under 9.5.
I will, and conflictingly so, too, because I feel like this team could be good enough. You talked about with Tennessee. This team could be a good enough team to win, get into that 10, 11, or even 12th spot in the college football playoff and be that third team for the SEC.
I mean, this is an LSU team that if they come out on fire and firing on all cylinders, I mean, they could be looking at running the table until they go to Texas A&M or they welcome Alabama to Baton Rouge. Yeah. I mean, that's... They would have to catch absolute fire, but if they beat USC and UCLA and South Carolina, Ole Miss on your home field, slaughter Arkansas and Fayetteville, like, yeah, that this LSU team could be nasty. I'm taking over 9.5.
I'm taking it,
and I think they're a playoff team this year, my man. I think LSU makes it to the college football playoff with double-digit wins on their schedule. How about Ole Miss at 9.5? This will be the last one before we get to break.
This is my second throwing the house on it. I am taking over 9.5 wins for Lane Kiffin, Juice Kiffin, and Jackson Dart. I will take the Ole Miss Rebels winning at least 10 games, and it's not even necessarily because I think Ole Miss is that good, and I put that in italics or whatever you will, because I think this team is very, very good. But it's a very favorable schedule as well. You don't play Alabama this year. You have a lot of home games against key opponents. I think you start, gosh, you could start 6-0. Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, that puts you at 4. You beat Kentucky, you beat South Carolina, that puts you 6-0 heading to Baton Rouge. And at that point, I mean, Oklahoma, Arkansas, you beat Arkansas. I think you could beat Georgia and Athens.
Wow.
In Oxford.
Wow.
I think you could. I'm not saying that you will, but then you finish the year Florida and Mississippi State. Give me Ole Miss Rebels with 10 wins playing in the SEC Championship and making it to the college football playoff.
Okay, we'll see. I think they lose the game at LSU, and I think they lose the game to Georgia, but I think they beat everybody else. So that would put them at, what, 10-2?
Yeah,
I'm taking over with me. Yeah, I'm taking over. I'll take Ole Miss over 9.5 as well. We'll recap, or I guess wrap it up on this conversation. We got a few more teams to get to, and we will have all that for you, wrap it up, hand it off to Bill and Dan, and get into the weekend here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7.
online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I have a bad feeling we're not going to finish this topic, and I blame you for your time management skills,
that's
Christian,
fair.
And
I'll
that's okay. Let's get through a few more really quick, and we can carry this into next week, too, and that just encourages – that's the real tease in radio, yeah. A weekend tease. How about that?
Throw Auburn – how many games do you think Auburn will win – find out Monday.
Yeah. See you later. Have a good weekend. Okay. So we just did LSU Ole Miss. Let's do a couple more really quickly. Let's do Alabama and Missouri.
Oh, man.
I'll go and tell you, Missouri is going under 9.5, is Alabama. Both of them are going under 9.5 wins. I'll give you a rapid fire. How about that?
I'll agree with you on those. I'll say both teams 9-3 where it's respectable, but
they're not 10-win teams.
I at least not as of what I'm seeing right now. Brady Cook at Missouri, you lost a lot on the interior. You have arguably the best receiving core in college football. You can compete that with a couple other schools. But other than that, there's a lot of questions on their interior. And then as well with that defensive secondary, I'll agree with you. I'll go 9 wins for both of those as well. So I'll take the under.
Yeah, I've heard some secondary issues in Tuscaloosa as well. I mean, their offense is going to be good, but can they get to that Bama level defense this year for 24? And again, when you look at this, you're thinking 9.5 over under. Okay, that's not bad. But then it's like, wait, do you think they are a 10 win football team?
Right. And that's such a big jump, yep. It feels like.
Yep, it is. Absolutely. How about Texas at 10.5 wins? I asked Chris Gordy about this yesterday when Texas lost one of their go-to running backs, and you hate to see that. Hugh Freeze alluded to it today in his press conference. I mean, is Texas an 11-win football team? I'm going to say no. I think they're a 10-win team. I think they're competing to win the SEC. They'll represent the conference in the college football playoff as one of the attendees, but I don't think they get to 11 wins.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like, and it strictly goes to what we've seen Texas do, as well as Oklahoma and the Big 12, where you feel like they have a couple weeks in the middle of their schedule where they get a little sloppy, they get a little lackadaisical, and you're going to find out pretty early on in year number one that you can't do that in the SEC. You go to Ann Arbor to play Michigan, the Oklahoma game. I mean, you play Georgia, Texas A&M to end the year. I think you're 10-1 going into Kyle Field. I think you lose to finish 10-2.
And what's so crazy is it may not even matter.
It might not.
That game may just be for pure bragging rights, and A&M may just want it worse than you do, but then you'll just kind of, you know, wave to them goodbye as you hit the road to the college football playoff. I'll take under on Texas as well. Georgia, I'm going to keep it simple. They're going to be really good this year. They're going to be really good. I'm going to take over 10.5. I think Georgia is going to be it. I think they have a vengeance. I think they will be that good. Give me the Dogs to get 11 wins this season.
Can I bring in Lee Corso?
Go for it.
To hit you with a not so fast, my friend. I think they get 10. I think that they get 10, but gosh, the middle of this schedule is the epitome of a gauntlet. You go to Alabama, then you have Auburn. That could slip up game? Question mark. Mississippi State, but then you go to Texas, then you play Florida, and you go to Oxford and to Knoxville. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. Tennessee comes to Athens.
Okay,
but
that's a little bit better.
But again, as good as that team is, and I think that they are respectfully the favorite to win the college football championship and win three of the last four, I'll give them 10. But I will not give them 11, and I will not give them an undefeated season.
Okay. All right. So your house picks are Vandy over 2.5 wins, Ole Miss over 9.5 wins. My house pick is A&M under 8.5, and my other one is on Auburn. But you'll have to find out what that is next week.
Oh, he did it. He did it to him.
Christian, my man, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate you, my man. We'll talk to you again next week. High school football right around the corner. As we are wrapping up here and getting into the weekend, Bill and Dan coming up for the drive. They'll have you from 4 to 6, and then I'll be back on Monday 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you later.